Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 12, 2015. The UN Security Council says a proxy army in Sudan is responsible for the violence in Darfur. And South Sudan's High Court agrees to hear a lawsuit brought by 18 political parties to delay the proposed June elections.
Now the case has been admitted, and therefore what remains is to look at the substance of the case.
We'll have these stories and more coming up shortly. We first go to the United Nations headquarters. The United Nations Security Council adopted unanimously a resolution today on sanctions against Sudan for actions by its rapid support forces, which the government of Sudan created in 2013 to fight rebels in Darfur, southern Kordofan, and Blue Nile states. The resolution states the rapid support forces are significant contributors to violence in Darfur. The new resolution calls on the government of Sudan to remove all restrictions, limitations, and bureaucratic impediments imposed on the work of UN panel of experts, particularly in northern Darfur, where UNAMID and other humanitarian agencies have been denied access to investigate allegations of mass rape by Sudanese soldiers. It also requires the panel of experts to report immediately on any violations of existing sanctions to the UN Security Council's Sanctions Committee, eliminating the current 3 months reporting cycle, which some countries saw as too weak given the violence taking place in Darfur. The resolution expresses the Security Council's deep concerns about reported human rights violations in the three areas, especially aerial bombardments, the targeting of peacekeepers and civilians, and contravention of arms embargo, which the Council says is undermining its ability to protect the people of Darfur. Sudan has refused to allow UN experts or human rights groups into the town where mass rape allegedly occurred to conduct their own investigation. Officials in Bor confirm someone threw a grenade last night in town center, wounding 3 foreign nationals. So far, no suspects have been identified. As Jacob Achek reports from Bor, the county commissioner has condemned the attacks.
2 Ethiopian men and a woman were injured in last night's attacks. Police Commissioner Major General Tukula Ayom says an identified man threw a hand grenade at a group seated outside a supermarket in Jonglei State Capital, then ran from the scene.
I heard that the hand grenade happened at about 10 o'clock. It was dark because our shop closed at 9. But this experience, they delayed until 10. They came out from the supermarket. And they were sitting outside. So somebody just came with a hand grenade and then threw them.
Ayom said state police are searching for a suspect. Once identified, Ayom said he or she will be tracked down and arrested. Ayom said this marks the first time a hand grenade has been used to attack people in Bor. In December last year, 3 Ugandan nationals were killed by an armed man who witnesses said was wearing a police uniform. Bor County Commissioner Mameruk says authorities will send more police officers to patrol Bor's market areas. He said National Security Force will also be called in to beef up night patrol. Commissioner Mamer is urging the Ethiopian community to remain calm. He said he visited the 3 victims at Bor Civil Hospital this morning.
But one person is sustaining severe injuries.
Mamer says targeting foreigners for malicious attack in Bor County will not be tolerated.
As a commissioner of Bor County, I'm condemning the incident. We cannot survive in South Sudan without foreigners. The country without foreigners cannot be called a country. Because during the struggle, we'll be getting our support from the Soviet government, and up to now, they're still supporting us. So as a government, I'm condemning the incident, and these Ethiopians are our sisters and are our brothers for their solidarity with us during the struggle.
Last year, hundreds of Ugandan businessmen residing in Jonglei state capital called on state government to enhance security in Bor. They staged a public demonstration after three Ugandan nationals were killed. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek from Juba.
South Sudan's High Court says it will hear a lawsuit filed against the National Elections Commission. 18 political parties have asked the court to delay polls scheduled for June 30th. Philip Thornaleu reports from Juba.
The opposition politicians who filed suit against NEC say that holding elections on June 30th will violate South Sudan transitional constitution. The constitution says there has to be a nationwide census before elections are held, but the government body that will conduct the population count says it cannot do so before the vote. The High Court listened to the lawyer representing the opposition parties yesterday in Juba and agreed to continue with the case, which was filed in January. High Court President Chanrej Madud says the court will ask members of the NEC and Justice Ministry to be present when the case is heard on March 3rd. Lem Akol, the chairman of the SPLM for Democratic Change, or SPLM-DC party, commended the High Court decision to hear the case.
We are pleased with the progress of this sitting. We think that it achieved the desired results. Now the case has been admitted, and therefore what remains is to look at the substance of the case.
Akol says the opposition wants peace to be restored in South Sudan before elections are held. He says that holding elections when parts of the country are still in conflict will mean that the vote is not inclusive.
Now it is a question of establishing before the court whether our case is justified or not. And we are confident that we have a strong case.
The NEC says it cannot comment on the case before it is heard in court. In December last year, the government approved a budget of 1.5 billion South Sudanese pounds, or around $517 million, for the polls. And last month, the NEC set June 30th as the date for the elections. South Sudan's transitional constitution says the term of office of President Salva Kiir and of the national legislature end on July 8th. Experts say it will be near to impossible to hold elections in the country on June 30th and declare the results in little more than a week. But the issue of whether or not elections should go ahead at the end of June may become a moot point if a power-sharing proposal that was agreed to this month by Mr. Kiir and rebel leader Diamachar is finalized. The proposal says that a transitional government of national unity will be set up not later than July 9th of this year and will remain in power for 30 months. It also calls for the tenure of the National Assembly to be extended for 30 months from July 9th. Under the term of the power-sharing proposal, which was brokered by regional bloc IGAD, elections will not be held before the end of the transitional period or around December 2017. For BOA News, I am Philip Thornaleu in Juba.
Six governors from South Sudan are on a tour of East Africa to lobby the heads of states of the East African region to support a power-sharing version of South Sudan's government. The governors met the Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta yesterday and have proceeded to meet the Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni today. Michael Atit has the story from Washington.
The six state governors met with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and discussed what they see as Kenyans' key role in stopping the conflict in South Sudan.
People are shedding blood in South Sudan, and Kenya had been in the forefront struggling to bring peace to South Sudan, which started with the CPA that brought us independence. So we thought that Kenya can also play a very big role to bring the conflict that we have now to a settlement.
The governor's lobbying tour comes just over a week after President Salva Kiir and his arch rival in South Sudan 14-month-old conflict, Riek Machar, signed a power-sharing proposal brought by regional bloc IGAD. Some of the terms of the agreement still have to be ironed out, including the structure at the very top of the transitional government. Mr. Kiir's side wants there to be two vice presidents with equal power, but the opposition wants there to be vice president and first vice president with slightly different powers and privileges. Western Equatoria Governor Joseph Bangazi Bakasoro says he and the five other governors don't think the vice presidential structure of the government will work. He notes that the conflict in South Sudan began as a rift in the ruling SPLM party and says the governors think an agreement signed late last year in Arusha, Tanzania, to reunify the SPLM party should be the basis for deciding the structure of the transitional government.
The Arusha agreement could be implemented, and if it is implemented, then the structure of the government will be discussed by the South Sudanese people. The SPLM will have a certain percentage. Then we have the political party that we can give a percentage. But now with the current structure whereby the president and the first vice president and the second vice president, which is not in our constitution, I think if this one is implemented, it may not bring peace to South Sudan.
Bakasoro says the governors feel strongly that Vice President James Wani Iga should not be moved aside to make room for someone else to hold the more powerful position of first vice president. That is one of the proposals in the power-sharing blueprint brought by IGAD.
The current vice president has been royal. He has been so obedient, and people recognize him for that act. Removing him now from his position to go to the third level and then bring somebody else to his position is itself a humiliation to the region where he comes from. I think if this one is implemented, it may not bring peace to South Sudan.
Bakasoro says Kenyatta assured them that Kenya will try its best to help bring peace to South Sudan in the coming round of peace talk, which is scheduled to resume on February 19th in Addis Ababa. The six governors are expected to visit Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni today for more talks on South Sudan's slow-moving peace process. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the United States comes up with anti-poaching strategies. Find out more after this break.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the first thing you would like others to know about your country?
South Sudan is a country that have natural resources. We have wild animals, mostly in Boma Mountains. We have a Nile with a lot of fishes. We have other resources like petroleum. Yeah, most of us, 60% of South Sudanese people, they do keep cattle.
Our country is peaceful and people integrate from different communities, but it has too much tribalism that make them separate.
South Sudan is a good place, and if only people could know that and they settle and they devolve it, I'm telling you, it is the best country to live in.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Youth ministers from the Commonwealth Nations, the former British colonies, have ended a meeting in Cameroon on how to prevent young people from being tempted to join terrorist organizations. The ministers agree that two of the biggest factors are massive unemployment and failure to involve young people in decision-making process. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has more from the capital, Yaoundé.
The Deputy Secretary General of the Commonwealth, Deodat Maharaj, says Africa is the world's most youthful continent, with 65% of the population below the age of 35. 10 to 15 million people enter the African labor market each year. Maharaj says this is potentially dangerous for a continent that is poor and facing challenges of war, disease and terrorism.
People don't have jobs, they don't have livelihoods, they don't have education, they don't have services where they live, they may do other things. What we want to do is to provide the best possible technical perspective and analysis for a government to decide, based on national ownership, which option is the preferred option.
African youth leaders, including Namibian-born Katjitguru Pauline, says the greatest problem with Africa is that youths who constitute a majority of the population are often not listened to before policies are drafted.
One of the biggest things that is going to suppress the voice of the African youth is that there is no consultation between youth and seniors. And how do you unite people from different backgrounds, people from different cultures, people with different perspectives? You engage and you consult. Don't speculate. Don't come up with things that you think is going to benefit the African youth.
Jean-Marc Afesimbafo of Cameroon's National Youth Council says young people in Africa continue to face daunting challenges because educational systems do not give them the opportunity to develop their full potential.
We have to reform our educational system to equip the youth with the skills necessary, not to wait for jobs, but also to be able to create jobs for themselves. And so we have to move from that educational system, which is essentially based on education, when we just took over our independence, and we need to form administrators, we need to form civil servants to nurture this young nation.
Afesimbafo adds that young people have a hard time obtaining loans from financial institutions. Zambian Minister of Youth and Sports, David Musonda, says terrorism, especially the Boko Haram insurgency in Nigeria, is partly driven by chronic pervasive unemployment.
That does not give the young people the mandate to go into illegal activities. Government is concerned, the Commonwealth is concerned, the world is concerned about the youth. We have relatively a huge young population across Africa. And these are very productive, they have the energy, and to go and begin to join terrorist groups does not provide a solution to the employment challenges that we have.
The youth ministers said they can defuse the unemployment time bomb by working with the private sector and government to create safe, decent, and competitive employment opportunities. They said they will encourage multinational companies investing in Africa to use African labor. They also reiterated calls on African countries to invest in agriculture. That sector employed 70% of African youth before 1985, but doesn't attract young people today due to lack of government support. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé.
A report issued by the media watchdog Reporters Without Borders said press freedom declined around the world last year. The annual World Press Freedom Index said conditions in two-thirds of the countries surveyed worsened in 2014. The declines were powered by armed conflicts and non-state actors like the Islamic State terrorist group. South Sudan is ranked number 119, but went up 5 ranking from the 2013 index. Sudan dropped 2 and is ranked number 172 out of 180 countries. Violations against press freedom increased 80% since 2013, affecting the majority of the 180 countries surveyed. Finland earned the top mark for the fifth year, helping Europe and the Balkans rate best, despite drops in press freedom scores in the region. The Middle East and North Africa are in the last place. The U.S. government has unveiled its strategy to fight the illegal wildlife trade. President Obama says wildlife trafficking undermines security while declimating ionic animal population. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Three federal agencies, the Departments of State, Interior, and Justice, have released the National Strategy for Combating Wildlife Trafficking. It comes 1 year after President Obama announced its guiding principles. In the strategy's opening letter, Mr. Obama writes that because of the actions of poachers, species like elephants and rhinos face the risk of significant decline or even extinction. He adds that well-armed, well-equipped, and well-organized networks of criminals and corrupt officials exploit porous borders and weak institutions. Jimmy L. Mandima is Director of Program Design and Partner Relations at the African Wildlife Foundation, which played a role in developing the strategy.
I consider this to be extremely commendable on the part of the U.S. government. And for us, this just means the global community will look at the U.S. as a global leader that is charting the way to deal with this big problem challenging the wildlife trafficking.
Elephant tusks and rhino horns are a big part of the poaching trade. Such items are in great demand in parts of Asia.
The wildlife that are being targeted for this illicit trade are a natural heritage mostly for Africa, but for the global community as a whole. The keystone species, elephants, rhinos, the great apes, and the carnivores, are really ecological makers in the ecosystems and habitats. So they contribute to how the ecosystems provide services and goods to the whole global community.
The U.S. strategy also raises concerns about tigers, sharks, tuna, sea turtles, exotic birds, iguanas, chameleons, and even tarantulas. Mandima says wildlife are an economic asset, driving the tourism industry in many parts of the world. The anti-poaching strategy lists three priorities. Mandiba says the first is strengthening law enforcement in the U.S. itself.
The U.S. is currently the second largest global consumer of these illicit products. And a lot of that is because the ports are porous and people are able to sneak in these illicit products. So strengthening law enforcement means that there would be more technology and reinforced staff, you know, effort to man these ports and basically be able to detect better the infiltration and entry of these illicit products.
The second part of the strategy calls for reducing demand through public awareness campaigns in the U.S. and public diplomacy abroad.
Part of it is the issue of ignorance, just not being aware of where these resources are coming from. So the awareness campaign are really to educate the public, communicate in very basic terms the source of the products they are enjoying, to simply say we are actually causing decimation of keystone species.
The third priority is building international cooperation and commitments. The African Wildlife Federation is contributing to the anti-poaching effort through its $10 million Urgent Response Fund. Mandibut says it's helping to pay for trained sniffer dogs that can detect illegal wildlife cargo. The dogs will be used at ports or airports in Kenya, Tanzania, Ethiopia, and the DRC. The AWF also pays for public service announcements in China featuring actor Jackie Chan and basketball star Yao Ming.
Talking to each other, engaging our patriots in Asia, in Africa, and having one common voice.
Mandima says it's time that major kingpins in wildlife trafficking are prosecuted and sentenced to set an example. The U.S. National Strategy for Combating Wildlife Trafficking says the crisis must be addressed aggressively and quickly, or it will be too late. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. An Egyptian court released two Al Jazeera journalists today after adjourning their retrial on charges of supporting the Muslim Brotherhood until February 23rd. Cheers and applause erupted in the Cairo courtroom as a judge set bail at $33,000 for Mohamed Fahmy and no bail for his colleague Bahir Mohamed, who reacted with a simple statement on Twitter, "I am free." An Al Jazeera spokesman said today bail is a small step in the right direction and allows Bahir and Mohamed to spend time with their families after 411 days apart. Many people are reported to be dead after an explosion rocked a market in the northeastern Nigerian town of Biu. A VOA reporter in the area says a bomb went off at about 3:20 p.m. local time today. A member of Nigeria's civilian task force told VOA that rescue workers are evacuating both dead and injured from the scene, adding that the casualty figure is very high. There is no immediate claim of responsibility for the blast. And finally, the Red Cross says its Ebola workers in Guinea are being attacked an average of 10 times per month, endangering efforts to spread or to stop the spread of the disease. In a statement today, the International Red Cross said the most recent incident was Sunday in the town of Forcaria, western Guinea, where two workers were beaten while trying to conduct a safe burial for Ebola victims. The Red Cross says safe burials are crucial to stopping the spread of the disease because dead bodies can still transmit the virus. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song "Jain Gidam" by Richard Badagbo. Listening to that to Richard Badagbo of Life Entertainment with the song "Jain Gidam." I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
Gashimbadun fijinu, bejebumusha ken fijinu.